This is HPR episode 1740 entitled, Mailing List Etiquette. It is hosted by Dave Morris and is about 46 minutes long. The summary is, some advice about best practices on mailing lists.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello everyone, this is Dave Morris. My topic today is entitled Mailing List Etiquette. And just to give you some context to start with, in February this year, which is 2015, I created a script to enhance the monthly community news show notes by adding a section to it which summarizes the various discussions on the HPR mailing list over the last month. My script processes the messages that it finds on the Gmain site. That's where we copy our list messages. And it formats them into threads and reports about each of the threads, how many messages are there and so forth. Now, as I was writing this script, I noticed that people were often making errors when they were replying to existing messages and message threads. And they were also making some mistakes when creating new threads on the list. And that motivated me to talk about avoiding doing that and also just some general do's and don'ts of mailing list use, which I thought might be helpful. So as usual, I've got a short set of notes on the main HBR page, and then that links to a larger set which much more comprehensive. In fact, the notes are quite long. My son checked them over for me and he said, Dad, this is too long, you should put a summary in. So I did. There's a summary of the key points in the document, really the do's and don'ts of it. There's a technical piece as well, which I haven't summarized. So I hope you find that useful. You could stop at that if you really wanted to. You just wanted to get the gist of it and not hear the details. Read the details, more is the point. So let's start off with the definition of a thread. A thread is a collection of messages relating to a subject. It's an old concept, goes back to a time before the internet, and I remember finding this concept in Usenet news before we had email at all. Our university I worked at was a great user of Usenet news back in those days, and there were very strict rules about how you conversed on news, which stuck with me and I've carried on into email. So in current mail systems, you tend to find the term conversation used as well, as an alternative to thread, probably a little bit more meaningful. But whatever you call it, it still boils down to a way of ordering messages to show which ones are applied to another. In fact, if you think about it, or if you examine what's actually happening, it's a sort of tree-like structure where there's a root of the tree, which is the first message, and then branches, which is are the replies, and replies to replies, and so on and so forth. Now, many mail clients offer a threaded view of mail messages. I have been using Thunderbird now for a fair number of years, and because I'm a Debian user, it's called IceDove for some obscure reason. And threading can be enabled on a per folder basis. You don't have to see the threaded view, and but I think it does a lovely job. So I've included a picture in the notes showing a view of a thread from the HPR mailing list. While I was researching this subject, I found an add-on for Thunderbird, which does another analysis of threads. It's called ThreadViz, has links to it in the show notes, and it displays a graphic at the top of a message, giving quite a good, I think anyway, a good visualization of what a thread is and how it's laid out and who's responsible for which bit. It's all coloured and got lines linking bits together. So that's included in the picture as well, just for your just for interest. So the thread that I've analysed is the one from February the 12th this year, where Ken Fallon forwarded a message to the list from an organisation called Cybery, looking to see if we wanted to join in any cross promotional opportunities. Now, hopefully you can see this and it renders okay for you. You'll see that the thread is displayed in the Thunderbird pane, and I've expanded it. There's a little triangle to the left of the pane, which when you click it, opens up the whole thread. And the messages are lined up one under the other with little lines connecting them to show which ones are applied to what. And the subject of each one is displayed, and the sender and the time and so on. I haven't included every minute detail. I've cut it, trimmed it down somewhat. Anyway, hopefully you can get an idea of what the thread is and looks like. If you look, there's also the ThreadViz display in this image, and I think it does a really nice job. And it does an extra thing that you don't get from Thunderbird, which is it shows there's an initial message, an external message, which starts the whole thread. What that was a message was sent to Ken, and Ken forwarded it, and the ThreadViz is aware of this and has indicated that there was an earlier message which is not part of the HPR thread. It wasn't a message sent to the list. It does it with a little grey box, and all the others are coloured circles connected with coloured lines, and the length of the line, I've switched that option on, length of the line gives you an indication of the time between one message and the next. You can see the messages if you just hover your mouse cursor over the circle, and you can click on it and it will take you to that message. You view it in the normal viewing arrangement that you have on this mail client. Just to continue with the ThreadViz thing, in case you're interested in it, the only slight downside I've found with it is that it uses the global search and indexer within Thunderbird, and so you need to switch that on. I'd switched it off in the past because my previous machine was not quite up to running it, doing lots of mail indexing all the time. My new machine, i7 with quite a lot of RAM, does a fine job, so I hardly notice it. But if you want to get into this, you might want to bear that in mind. ThreadViz uses the global search and index thing, database I assume it is, to enable threading across folders, which is, I don't know of many other things that do that. I don't know. If you've got lots of folders, or indeed I assume lots of mail accounts being viewed from the same client, I haven't really investigated that, but it's quite a nice concept. Next, let's look at how email threads actually work. And we need to look a little bit into the structure of email, what an email message is and so forth, in order to do this. This structure is defined by an internet specification known as an RFC, Request for Comments. And the one covering email is RFC number 5322. The title is Internet Message Format. Not suggesting you dig very deeply into these, but in case you ever need to know about the RFCs, I've linked to them in the show notes. Now, an email message consists of two parts, the header and the body. To be absolutely precise about it, there's actually another structure called the envelope, in which the header and body are enclosed. But that's a thing that's used when the message is in transit, and it's removed on delivery. So we don't want to go into too much detail about this, and there's many sources of information about the whole process of how email works, such as the Wikipedia article I've linked to. Anyway, the message header contains lines known as fields, and these have the format of a name, the name of the field, followed by a colon, then a space and a value, and the value can be any length pretty much. It can actually run over several lines, but there's a convention where you have to indent the second line and second and subsequent lines. The body part is the actual message, the message content, and that, as you probably know, can vary in structure from just a simple load of text to a very arbitrarily complex hierarchy of MIME objects such as HTML, pictures, videos, audio, all these sorts of things encoded as MIME objects. Again, there's a link to MIME if you want to dig deep more deeply. I won't go into any more about that. So in the notes there's an example of some of the header fields, and I've actually extracted these from the first message in the thread that we were looking at earlier in the picture. It's a message from Ken Fallon, and it's to the HPR mailing list, and the subject is forward FWD colon cross promotional opportunities. Now these headers, these particular headers, are used by the mail client when displaying the message. Usually they're reformatted and made to look nicer than the bare headers. So one of the key header fields, I should say, that is important in terms of threading is the message ID field. Message ID is the name part is message hyphen ID, and it's followed by a value that looks a bit like an email address, but it isn't one, and it's a unique identifier. It's always got a less than and greater sign around it, and it's not for human consumption, it's for machine readability, so it's usually some long string of gobbledygook, hexadecimal values, whatever it is. It's meant to be globally unique, as much as that's possible to achieve, so it should be, there should be no other email that has that ID on the planet. One of the funny things about the standards of email is that there's huge amounts of flexibility, sometimes to the point where you wonder why it was ever decided to be so. And one of the things there is that it's not mandatory to have a message ID field, but if you don't, then lots of things fail. So my personal opinion is that email clients that don't generate a message ID are broken. Don't know of any offhand, but I won't be surprised if there are some out there. And the next two fields are called in reply to and references. In reply to is in hyphen reply hyphen to, and references as it sounds. So when an email client replies to a message, it generates header fields which refer back to the ancestors of the message. So the first message that's ever written on a subject, you can regard as the parent or the root of the tree, depending on how you want to look at it. And the references or the in reply to refer back to that message as the parent. The in reply to field normally contains a single value which just refers to the parent message ID. The references field is a bit more complex and doesn't have to be there. In fact, neither of these have to be there, although you can't do threading if you don't get either, but you can have either of them. It depends on how it's been implemented. The references is a list. When I first encounter it, I thought, oh gosh, this is great. It will contain everything I need to know about a thread. But of course it doesn't, and it can't, I guess. It would get ridiculously long if it contained everything. But what it does contain, it will contain the contents of the parent message's references field, if there is one, and then it will be followed by the parent's message ID field. So it points to the parent, and if the parent happened not to be the first in the chain, the parent will be pointing back to its parent, so that will also be in the references, and that might also have a parent which is pointed back to, and so on. So you do have at least some of a chain there that lets you follow back up the thread. And in every case, when I say a pointer back to a message, I'm talking about holding the message ID of the message. So I've given a real example of references and in reply to fields on the message which immediately followed the first message in the thread that we looked at earlier. Now, something rather odd about this one, at least a little unusual about this particular case, and that's that in the references list there's not only a pointer to the first message in the thread, there's also a pointer to another message which has got a string of numbers and stuff followed by cybrary.it. So that's the message that originally came in saying you might be interested in this, which was then forwarded to the list. And so that gives you some clue as to how the whole business of pointing to an external message could be arranged. Cybery message is not on the list. It's an external message which is being referenced. I've actually put in the notes the relevant headers of the message that Ken originally received, which are cited in his forwarded message. Okay, it's getting a bit deep now, so we won't go too much deeper. So there's the question: what's a thread then? So you probably, and I've hinted already, that an email message thread is the structure that's defined by the links that I've been talking about. That each message points to its ancestors, and the whole collection of messages forms a tree. If you analyze it, you say message A points back to message B, etc., etc., then if you look at it from a different point of view, you can say, well, the children, or at least the sub-thread that hangs from a given message, are these messages. So you can actually build an actual tree structure in your program which is capable of representing the relationships between all of these messages. So I did this in the script that I was mentioning, and when I was researching more for this talk, I came across a site written by a guy called Jamie Zawinski, where he was one of the authors of one of the early Mozilla mail products, and he talks at great length about how he implemented the threading algorithm, which is, I found, certainly quite interesting. So, as I say, I've used something like this, which I have arrived at independently, I should say. So it's probably garbage, but never mind, it works. And it's also in the Gmain software, because it also does some quite nice threading. I think that's as far as I want to go with this now. I can appreciate that I'm heading off into the weeds here, and you might be less enthusiastic about all this than I am. So I'll stop at this point and get on to the next subheading, which is talking about list etiquette. So you do find this referred to as netiquette. I think it's sort of internet etiquette is where that's come from. But there's a bunch of things that you're advised to do to make the whole business of conversing via email work properly. And the main thing is, well, I mean, two things are thread consistency, and the other is making sure that the sort of structure of the body of the message, citations and so forth, is all properly structured. So if we look at the thread consistency and some do's and don'ts there, first point is, when you come to reply to a message on a mailing list which is part of a thread, then you need to use reply. We'll come on to some of the alternative things that people do, which are not a good idea, a bit later on. But you should have a reply facility within your client, and it will definitely look at the message you're replying to, use the headers, and will set up the in reply to and references headers appropriately in the message that's constructed. If your mail client can't do this, then it's broken, I think. I'd be fascinated to hear about it. Maybe you need to configure things, though I've never seen such a thing. Normally they come with this feature built in my experience anyway. Or you need to throw it away and get something else which works properly. Just as an aside, you should pay attention to how you do the reply, because you might be misled by where the reply is actually going to. So in the case of the HPR list, the list is not configured to make your client send its replies to the list. So what will happen is, if you simply hit the plain reply button on some clients, they will try and send the reply to the sender only, yeah, not include the list. My email client, this Thunderbird iStuff, has got a reply to list button on it, and that sends to the list only and not to the sender, which is probably the best thing to do. There's also another one which is reply to all, which goes to the list and to the sender, or sender. Oh no, yeah, it'd be single sender, but list and other people CC'd perhaps. I normally just reply back to the list, unless I know that perhaps somebody's been included who's not on the list for whatever reason. I normally do the reply to list because I'm assume that people who are sending things to the list just want to get answers from the list. They don't want their own private answer as well, because they've got to then have to file that somewhere as well. That's not always a valid assumption, I have to say. Some people do prefer to keep the list mail separate from private mail, and they would see your reply to the list and to them as sort of both. So I don't work that way, but there you go. So the second point in the etiquette list is, don't change the subject line. So it's the point of the conversation or thread is that it's about a particular subject, and it's bad etiquette to change that subject field as you go. I mean, you can do it, your client will probably let you do it, but it's not good practice to do it. The only odd case where it might be if the first subject was misleading, and you want to make it clearer. But the convention is to put the new subject line, the new subject topic, at the start of that field, and then in brackets, usually square brackets, put was followed by the original topic, so people can say, oh look, it's changed. Oh, it's changed because that first topic was not very clear, now it's clearer. But probably best to avoid it if you possibly can. Now here's the next one is, don't try to start a new thread by replying to an old one. Now, this is a very common problem, mistake that's made. Somebody will come to the mailing list, they'll see, oh, there's the last message that came out. Right, oh, I want to send a message to the list. And what they do is they just open the last message, hit reply, and change the subject line. Now, this is very bad etiquette. It breaks the threading process, because there's a brand new topic just appeared in the same thread. And it also has consequences which can be counterproductive. So I'm giving you an example here, which is that the consequences, that is, the script that summarizes the message threads for the HPR community news will not see such a change of topic as a new thread. And what it does is it lists the thread topics and number of messages. So if you have tried to start a new thread by replying to an old one, your message will be included in that existing thread, and it won't appear as a separate topic. And that's because it's nigh on impossible to do that. In the first picture in the notes, you can see the existing thread is towards the end, the topic has changed to intro and outro, and without changing to a brand new thread. So the subject of intro and outro doesn't appear in the community news notes for February because of that. So don't do that. Just, if you need to start you need to write a new message to the list, certainly open up an existing message, but create a brand new message and copy the address if you can't remember to what it is yourself. Don't reply to it. And another common mistake, which I've headed, don't start a new thread to reply to an existing one. People do tend to do a thing where they want to make a comment on a message, but what they do is they create a brand new message, copy the subject from the existing one, and then write their addition, their comment, their message. That will not be joined into the thread because, as you probably hopefully got from the techie bit earlier on, the mail client will not, because you're not using reply, it will not pick up the links to link it into the thread because you're not replying. So it will be an orphan message that's dangling around all by itself. Now, some thread analyzing systems do try hard to get around this problem. The strategy is to look for these orphaned messages, which are determined from the fact that their subject line is the same as an existing thread, but they're not threaded. Then it joins them into the thread at an appropriate position based on the timestamp. The Gmain algorithm does that. So if you look at the threaded view of HPR messages there, you will find that it's sometimes repaired stuff. Jamie Zawinski's system, which he described, does this as well by an orphaned message refitting process, and the HPR community news script that I wrote also does this. But Thunderbird doesn't when you're looking at the threads in the display that I showed you earlier. If the subject line is changed, you know, if it's just a small spelling change or a capitalization change, then no algorithm will repair this. None to my knowledge, anyway, because there's all of the clues that would allow it to do that are in the subject line. So if you break that, then you can't even expect any repairs. But the best thing to do is not to do it in the first place. The other issue that seems to hit the HPR list quite a lot is digest messages. Don't reply to them. Many mailing list systems do offer a digest facility, and the idea is that if it's a very busy list, it can be more convenient for people to receive a daily message from the list where all of the messages since the last digest are all bunched together. They do this on the basis of a timing between the last digest, or there's a counter which looking at the number of messages that are going through the list, and when it reaches a threshold, 50 say or something, it will send out a digest. Anyway, the digest consists of all of these messages bundled together into one individual message. And, you know, it has its advantages. But I would suggest that it's probably the most useful where the list is very busy, or more to the point, contains read-only material like newsletters or something like that. Just to expand a little bit more on this digest business, some mailing list systems, including the mailman system that's used for the HPR list, generate either plain text or MIME digests. You can actually select which one you want in your own configuration. The plain text format conforms to an RFC, RFC 1153. It's not that complex. It's a great format for human readability. There's a sort of table of contents type bit followed by the messages. But the messages have been severely hacked down to the minimum headers and the body of the message. And sometimes the message has been trimmed down a lot if the message is in a MIME format, has got attachments or anything like that. Those won't be in the digest usually in this form. But certainly all of the threading information is purged as the digest is created. The MIME format is different because it consists of, the digest message is one message with a summary in it of the messages to follow, followed by a bunch of attachments. And each attachment is a MIME encoded version of the messages that that have passed through the list. So each message is actually does have its full headers. I believe the instances where I've seen this, that's certainly been the case. I haven't done a survey of what else is available out there, but I'm pretty certain that the algorithm is simply to pick up the message and stick it into the digest as an attachment. Now that's actually potentially usable, but again, I have not come across a mail client which can do the right thing. If you go to a digest, you see the messages in it as if it's one message divided up into partitions. If you say reply, there's no way you can say I'd like to reply to this message inside this message. You just say reply, and it means reply to the message I'm currently reading. That is the digest. So I think that if a list is about discussions, like the HPR list is, receiving digests is a problem if you ever want to reply to anything, because you can't reply to the individual messages within the digest. And if you do it, you will end up with a completely unthreaded, orphaned message, which pretty much can't be re-threaded by the algorithm I was talking about earlier, because the subject of the digest is, hello, I'm digest number 42. How could it contain the subject of all of the however many messages within it? So I would suggest that for a low traffic list like HPR, it'd be better if you didn't subscribe to the digest list. Just go for the one message at a time option. If you do subscribe to the digest list, you're either going to have to avoid replying to anything, or you're going to have to construct messages by taking the digest and editing out the information you need and building a message that looks as close as possible to a reply to a message as you would have created if you'd got the straight message, and then inject that into the system and hope that the algorithms that mend the threads can do a job on what you've done. I've actually seen this written down as a strategy in some university where this must have been quite a problem. I haven't actually linked to that thing because it just seems so insane personally, but you may think otherwise. So the next subheading here is, since we've dealt pretty much with all I can say about threads for the moment, formatting the reply is also an issue. It doesn't really affect the threading thing. Threading is all about using reply and so forth to get the headers right. But formatting the contents is also an issue when you're sending and receiving messages on a mailing list. I've referenced a Wikipedia article on the subject of posting style, which does go into quite a lot of depth, more than I'm going into here. Many mail clients do offer an ability to do a fair bit of formatting on the original message when you're replying to it. And if that's available, usually it's something you need to switch on, at least in the clients I've used, then switch it on, because it's really useful. So the first piece of advice under this heading is to quote the text that you're applying to. It's regarded as bad etiquette not to mark the original text in a reply as a separate piece of text, a thing that you're replying to. So normally you start this section of the message with a line that says something like, on date and time, author wrote, a date and time from the original message, the message you're replying to, and the author field is the sender's name, person you're replying to. The text of the original message then follows with a greater than sign and a space after, in front of, sorry, each line. So I've got an example here. I don't think I can read it and convey anything useful. Now then, if a further person were to reply to that reply, then a further header message would be put introducing the secondary reply. Actually, it'd be the tertiary reply, wouldn't it? And followed by the thing that was in the previous message with the greater than signs, and the whole lot with further greater than signs in front of it, and the follow-up text. So there's my description doesn't do it justice. Hopefully you'll find the actual thing itself looks better than that. Most mail clients will handle this for you to some reasonable degree. The other factor is that when you have this sort of original quote and then the supplementary quote and then you're about to add your comment to that, when you have that sort of structure, then and you're viewing it, different mail clients will give you all different types of add-ons and improvements and features to make it easier to read. In the case of Thunderbird that I use myself, there are add-ons which will colour the different levels of quote, so it's easier to see, you know, that's the red one and that's all together in a block and that's the blue one and so on and so forth. And the one I tend to use more than any other, it collapses the quotes, so the innermost quote is collapsed down with a little plus sign beside it that you can click on to expand it, and then the thing that wraps that is also collapsed down so that you can expand that. And I've got an example of that a bit later on in the notes, which might just make it a little clearer. So the next hint is to tell you to trim the text that you're applying to. So if the first message was 100 lines long and you want to reply to that and say something like, I disagree with this because blah blah blah, then it's not necessary to leave the entire text intact. I mean, for a start, by beginning at the start of the thread and walking through it, you will see it anyway. There's generally thought to be a good idea to leave some of it, but more particularly the bit that you're commenting on. If there are salutations, hello list, and signatures at the end, and possibly a footer from the mail system itself, get them all out, remove them all. The other thing you see from time to time is that people using PGP or GPG signatures, their message will contain these. You really need to remove them as well. I often see these things being left intact in a reply, and it looks to the mail client as if the reply is signed with the originator's signature, which confuses it enormously. Most mail clients that understand these types of signatures will remove them anyway. Certainly with Thunderbird and the Enigmail plugin that you use to get to GPG signing and encryption, these things are handled automatically. So if your client doesn't do this, you seriously need to think of enhancing it or replacing it, I would suggest. So the next and almost the last point is about top posting. Now this is, if you don't understand what it is the practice of putting the reply before the text of the previous message. This is usually regarded as bad etiquette, since it reverses the normal flow of conversation and requires the message to be read from the bottom up. So the first point is at the bottom of the message, the reply to that is above it, the reply to that is above that, and so on and so forth. And the worst case, I would say, is where there's a chain of replies and comments in a message, and there's been a bunch of different approaches to the way the reply is formatted. Some people would put the reply underneath the original, and some would put it on top. It can be extraordinarily difficult to work out what the actual conversation was because of that. Most mail clients will offer the facility of positioning your text, your reply, after the original text. And if they do, I mean, Thunderbird, for example, says, do you want it before or after? And select the after, I would suggest. Some people do feel that a top-posted reply is more convenient. because they don't have to scroll past all the preceding material to read it. But as I was saying before, using an email client which collapses and expands quotes is a good compromise, because everything but the last part on an incoming message is collapsed, and that reduces the size and complexity of the message as you're viewing it quite considerably. And my screenshot shows a later message from the HPR mailing list, which came from Mike Ray in as a comment to another message, and you can see the thing he's commenting on is just one line with a plus and a blue bar alongside it. If you click the plus, then it opens up to the full text that he's replying to, and then his reply follows after that. I haven't put it all in, I've trimmed it down a moderate bit. I left the thread viz display in just because I thought it was another interesting example of what it looks like. I have to say, though, the subject of top posting is a controversial one, and it might well be in a state of flux. When I was preparing this show, I found a long, long discussion about the right way to reply to a mailing list on the Mailman users mailing list. That's the Mailman mailing list software. I've been a subscriber to this list for many years because I used to manage a Mailman installation at the university I worked at. You might want to have to have a look through that. There's some quite interesting discussions. There's a fair number of slightly off-topic things there, but if you're interested in this whole issue, have a look at that, because I thought that there were some very telling arguments in there. One of the points that I must admit I maybe didn't know enough about was that many modern mail clients, particularly on phones and tablets, are not using the more standard posting style and going for top posting. In some cases, people were citing instances where their mail clients did not let them edit the original reply in any way, and certainly only allowed top posting. I certainly experienced this when I was working, when we installed Microsoft Outlook. The posting behavior that most people in the organization started to use was top posting and citing everything. All of the attachments would whiz around, and everybody's mailbox got totally stuffed with these long repeated messages where the entirety was cited over and over again, and that was largely down to Outlook, I believe. So my final point is to say, use an email client that can do the right thing. As in the Wikipedia article on posting style, there's the comment there that some mail clients aren't capable of following the etiquette, and this is my comment, Microsoft Outlook seems particularly challenged in this area, so avoid it and anything else that misbehaves. I do appreciate that this is not always possible, however, so it's a slightly idealistic view. Anyway, that's the end. I hope I haven't come across as too ranty, but I think these are some important points, and in a communal setup like a mailing list, it's good to conform and make the world better for others. Okay, that's it. Bye now.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.